Martin Scott pretending to be Dick Campbell. Campbell was sitting in the toilet behind him, and they did a full 10-minute spiel pretending he was Dick Campbell, marching up and down and shouting and bawling. And then at the end of it, Dick Campbell started laughing, and the whole team just went into fits of laughter, and Jimmy went bright red.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the CSI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually for Turton. I'm your host, Ian Stephen, and for today's episode, we meet a man from the middle of the field that played at the most extremities in the UK, from Devon to Dingwall, with a host of destinations in between. It's Gary Miller. Gary, how are you?
Not bad, Ian. Thanks a lot. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I was particularly perturbed at the weekend, perturbed to tell you, and you'll understand this, you're an NFL man, you understand the logistics and the quirks. I was at your initial stomping ground at Livingston-Aberdeen game, in the press box, and walking past me was a gentleman that had a Detroit Lions sweatshirt and a Green Bay Packers hat. And I stopped, what are you doing? Why are you wearing a Lions sweatshirt and a Packers hat? Turns out he was the journalist that was sitting next to me. He's an NFL fan. He doesn't have a team, and he was just decided to take both. But in football parlance, that's like having a half and half St. Mirren and Morton scarf. It's just something you shouldn't do.
Yeah, exactly. I know, but it's good that he's supporting, but yeah, a bit of a strange combo.
Yeah, and well, I had to sit right beside me as well, but we had some NFL chat instead of watching the game. So so enough about NFL. Into Gary Miller. Where were you born and brought up, Gary? Where are you from?
Born and brought up in Glasgow. Pretty central, almost sort of west side of Glasgow. Grew up there, sort of Yoker area, surroundings is Claybank and whatever else. So just west of where the hydro is just now.
You know what question is going to come next then when you're growing up in Glasgow, where there's a particular football club that had your affections as a child?
I grew up a Rangers fan. Used to go to the games, used to go to the Champions League games and stuff. So they're my big brother. So yeah, that was the side that I chose.
See, that's a very interesting point, because your first club was Livingston FC. And Livingston thrive, especially in your area, bringing in boys from Glasgow. How did you get noticed by Livingston? What were Livingston doing to set that kind of catchment area?
Well, I think there was a lot of Glasgow boys that came through, especially in the squad that I was involved in. You know, we had Graham Dorms, Robert Snodgrass, all boys from sort of central Glasgow. It happened at one point. I was training with Kilmarnock at the time, looking for a team, and we played a friendly against Mirren, against Livy, and ended up playing the game for Livingston as a trialist. Kilmarnock either had too many trialists, so I think we were trying a rebuild or something, and a few of us ended up playing for Livy, played well, scored a couple, and got signed for Livy the next day, and that was it. It went from there.
So it wasn't anything like hours and hours of recruitment and studying at your kind of background to see if you're going to be a good professional and talking to coaches. It's just kind of, well, it looks quite good. We'll say
Thunder on the day, scored a couple of goals. I was a striker then, and 3 or 4 days joined in, played really well, and then the next day we all get signed.
You know, there's an entire industry now devoted to recruitment, Gary, and you've just destroyed that in one sentence.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, and I think actually 3 or 4 of the boys that came in all ended up, you know, making a decent career out of the game. So yeah, pretty much ripped that one apart.
So your debut for Livy was in 2005, and Livy were in the SPL. How old were you when you made your debut?
I think I was 17. I was late 17, early 18. Was it
John Robertson or was it Paul Lambert that drew you in?
I think it was Paul Lambert. It was against Falkirk. He put me on as a substitute, and I think it was 1-0. And I think Snoddy was in the team at that time, and Graham Dorms, James McPake was involved as well. And I think I got on, we were losing 1-0, not that it was anything to do with me. Or it might have been 1-1 at the time, but I think Snoddy scored or had something to do with the goal. And I got on and it was 1-1, it finished 1-1. And you know, at that age, you're just delighted to be involved. And then you're in with a couple of your mates as well. And they go on in the Premier League and finish with a 1-1 on your debut. You're delighted, especially with me being a young defender at the time.
Did you have a chance to let your family know that you might be making your debut, or were they able to catch it?
My parents were brilliant. They come to all my football and my games everywhere. I think they've travelled just as much as I have. They go everywhere, so they would have been there anyway. And then, obviously, yeah, it's a touching moment for them when they get on, and they're delighted in the fact that it's a positive result as well. Then they're just as delighted as I was.
You mentioned Snodgrass, you mentioned Dorans, two players that went up to international success. Pretty sure Snoddy scored when he was 16 against Rangers. I think I was at that game. Were you aware at that point that those two players were incredibly special? Or were you just kind of naive 17-year-old just thinking everybody this good and it's just fun to be playing football?
Yeah, I think it's a bit strange. You know, at the time, you're just thinking, we're all just trying our best. We're all doing, you know, you had skill and quality above what most players had, you know. But when we actually went into the first team and we started scoring like 4, 5, 6 or 7 goals that season, then you start to know, right, he's on to something here. And then obviously the Rangers game, like he scored 1 or 2, you know, and the Almondvale was sold out, packed stadium. I think it was 2-1 it finished, possibly. And, you know, that's an amazing result for us at the time. And to have a youngster score some goals and be on the bench for that was incredible.
Did you, or have you managed to maintain relationships with any players that you played with through your kind of early stages of your career?
Yeah, no, I'm still in good contact with most of them. I came through at Livy with Scott Boyd, still speak to him. James McPake's at Dunfermline now, still keep in touch with James now and again. But most of that team, they all kind of talk to each other, or if we bump into each other, we'll keep in good contact, still speak to Graham and Snoddy, stuff like that. So a lot of people that were involved around about that time sort of linked up again with a big goalkeeper, Scott Finlay, that was involved at Livingston. I linked up with him again at St Johnston and stuff. So no, it was a real good group, and a lot of us were really young, obviously coming through the under-19s at the time. So there's a lot of boys that have stuck together and sort of stayed in touch. Maybe not every day, but when we do see each other or we ever might reach out, then we always have a good chat.
Was Alan Walker one of the players in that squad when you were coming through?
Yeah, Alzo was in the squad, and also Martin Scott as well. I still speak to him. He's managing at Gala Ferradine just now. So he's went on a good career as well. So there was a lot of good players in our under-19s team.
Whenever I spoke to Alan after matches, he seems to be a bit of a handful. Would that be a correct assessment?
He likes a wee opinion as well. Alzo does. He likes to voice it and tell you what he thinks. And but he was a good guy, Al. He was a good player as well. So I'm sure he was in the short and letting things get told.
He was one of those guys that if I could, I would have a fiver at the bookies that he was going to get in that match. I don't think I saw a match that he didn't get a yellow card.
Yeah, for sure. And it was funny that way, but I like to sort of have a wee bit of aggression in that and fire into tackles. And I think he mostly got booked for answering back more than his tackles, to be honest.
Well, it wasn't a great kind of season for Livy. Success-wise, I think that was the season that Livy went down. There was a huge squad turnover at that point. Did you sense you could push for playing time in that squad? Or did you still think, no, I need some seasoning, I'm probably going out on loan?
I think the best thing that could happen for a young player is probably that, you know, to get relegated or they need a shuffle. So for myself, it was brilliant and just enjoyed the most moments. I think I did go out on loan a wee bit. And then when I came back in the January, I played almost every game. So I think for a youngster, you know, the drop in the league was certainly a positive for me, because there wasn't as much maybe money at the club, or there was more emphasis on bringing some young players through, and that definitely benefited me.
The club was starting to go through a period of upheaval, especially financial upheaval. Purses were being tightened. I think the ownership were trying to desperately offload the club for a pound. Were you aware as a player that there was a bit of turmoil in the boardroom feeding down?
To an extent, but I think you don't, when you're that young, you know, 17, 18, I don't think you really know the whole business side of football yet. You're just kind of worrying about yourself, and footballers are kind of kept out of that situation unless you're probably one of the higher paid players or you're an experienced player. So we knew people were maybe losing their jobs or there was administrative stuff going on, but didn't have to worry too much because the young guys, probably not on a lot of money, wouldn't have to be affected by it. You know, it was probably going to push us up the ladder a little bit.
Well, you ended up going out on loan first at Yale, and then you went on loan to Ross County, and Ross County loan seemed to have worked especially well for you because that was your first kind of big move in football. How did the kind of loan to Ross County come about? Was it a success for you, and why did you decide to move there permanently?
So I think I went on loan the first start of the season in 2006 to Ayr United, played 15 and scored, came back in January, and I think I played a lot of games, mostly from then till the summer for Livingston. Played a few games in that spell against Ross County, I think, or it was maybe after, but Derek Adams was at Livingston at the same time as me. And he'd moved to Ross County, so he knew of me, he knew I was a young boy coming through. I'd trained against him, and I think I'd got injured at the same time as him, and I'd actually did my ankle or something like that, and I couldn't drive. So I had to travel with him, because he was the closest person that lived near me. So built up a sort of relationship and a partnership with him, travelling in together a wee bit, and then he moved to Ross County sort of as a player coach, and I think he recommended me to them, and they took me on loan at the start of the next season. Obviously, when I first found out about it, I wasn't too sure how far away it was, but was just delighted to go and play. They were in the league below. I think we were in the old League One at the time. And yeah, went out and played 20 or 25 games or something, and really enjoyed the season. Ended up winning the division and getting promoted, and, you know, got a lot of game time, which I got sent out for, got a lot of 90 minutes under my belt, and in a changing room with guys really trying hard to win a league and to do well. So, you know, there was a lot of positives for me there, moving away on my own at a young age as well, and a lot of growing up to do.
I think that's something that people don't think about so much, because football's concentrated in the central belt a lot. So a lot of times you can play for a club like Livy and you can still live at home with your parents in Glasgow. What's some of the major challenges for a young player moving away from home for the first time?
The distance was hard, and the fact that it was single track road after Perth, you know, was difficult because you're a young driver as well, and you're probably not as safe as you should be, which has changed now. But moving away, you know, learning how to cook. Luckily, I had a decent amount of knowledge on cooking for myself, keeping myself sort of eating quite healthy and stuff like that. But just a lot of stuff, getting used to paying bills on your own, sorting a lot of stuff out and growing up, which has benefited me in my longer and later life, and how I'm handling my stuff. So no, it was really good for me, and I would really advise it that, you know, if you can get a wee loan, move away and go and grow and learn, then younger players should do it, which you see happening a lot more now. But at that stage in that team, can I remember too many players being over 27, 28? And a lot of them were young guys, possibly, you know, a good amount of us were young single guys who were spending a lot of time together, like house sharing or just always around each other's house. So there was a good group that you never actually felt too lonely, or you were never left alone, and the management staff and the club would never have allowed that anyway, where you got sort of felt lonely and stuff. So it was a great experience for me, one that I really enjoyed. And as you touched on, it led into me moving there full time.
So what was the situation with Livingston? Because Livingston would have to make a decision whether they were going to retain you or extend your contract. Was it part of the kind of financial challenges at Livi? They needed to cut costs, or was it you thinking, you know, I'm enjoying my football here at Ross County, I want to go?
I think Roberto Lande was the manager at the time, just leading up to that, and he'd kind of said he wanted to keep me, maybe a 2-year deal or something. And I'd kind of spoke to him about that. Obviously, he was the manager, so when it came to sorting anything out, I think about a month or two later, a lot of the administration issues came up, and that was about March time. And I'd spoke to people at Ross County round about then as well about a pre-contract. And when that happened, then, you know, my mind was pretty much made up. I really enjoyed it there, and I was ready to go back and sort of thrive and enjoy playing football a lot more. Like you said, Livi was a bit crazy, you know. I think that was their second time in administration as well. So I was getting a bit older and wanting a bit of stability.
Well, what was it like for you working with Lande? Because whenever I spoke to him, I thought he seemed to be an incredibly accomplished coach. He knew what he was talking about. He was talking about things that I hadn't really heard of before in the Scottish football. He brought in ideas that were maybe new to me. What was it like for you working with him?
I never minded him. You know, he was an Italian guy that came in. As you said, they had a decent amount of football knowledge. I don't think his English was the greatest, but it wasn't the worst. They fit to get his points across and stuff like that. His training was actually all right. I don't remember at times thinking, this is insane. But, you know, it was a different method. We trained at different times. Some people never liked that or whatever else. But I don't mind doing stuff like that, especially if it's tactical and whatever else. So I kind of enjoyed his sessions. And when I had chats with him, he seemed like a nice guy who showed an interest, you know. And I don't know if people maybe had a sort of downside look on him because he eventually was a goalkeeper and they maybe thought he shouldn't have been a head coach or whatever. But I got on all right with him. You know, there was large spells of that season we did well and we're doing well and winning games. So there was stories that came out and maybe some silly stuff in the press about winning leagues and trying to push for Europe and stuff that just shouldn't have happened. But, you know, largely I think he did not too bad before that.
Well, I think any Livingston fan listening to this would be remiss if I didn't ask this question. But from an inside perspective as a player, what the heck was going on with Sony in charge at Livingston? Because it was one of the bizarrest years in my time covering football. What was it like as a player?
Yeah, bizarre is probably a good word. You know, I think we went away and stayed in the Ramada Jarvis Hotel for like 30 days in Livingston for pre-season. And like you were to stay there the whole duration. And I think after about 5 days, most of the team was like, what is going on here? You know, we've got families to go home to and we're like 20 minutes away, half an hour away. So I don't think that was a great start. In fact, I think the first week they were in, we were in the changing room and player by player, you had to go out and go into the lounge and you would go in and shut the door and it was like the lights weren't all on. There was a couple of lamps on. And you'd sit down, I don't know if you've heard this, but you'd sit down on a chair and there was like a desk, like Britain's Got Talent, and there was like Masoni and it was like 4 or 5 directors or whatever, and they would ask you a couple of questions, which I can't even remember right now, but they'd ask you a few questions and then they'd be like, thanks very much. And then you'd go up and leave and go back to the changing room and send the next person in. And I remember thinking, what, that is really strange. And then obviously we had the Ramada Jarvis and stuff and then moved on. But the pre-season was good, you know, a lot of it was football stuff integrated with some running and some fitness stuff. And they brought in some Italian fitness coaches and it was a lot of different stuff that I actually really enjoyed and took on. And that was when Rafa De Vita came to the club and I got on brilliant with Rafa. He was amazing when he first came. He was pinging ball. It was about left foot, right foot. He was quick. He was a finisher. And then sadly in pre-season, he got that bad ACL injury. And he just sort of struggled to, you know, he still was good. But the Rafa I seen before that was brilliant. And I was like, wow, this guy's been at Blackpool and stuff. He is brilliant. And it was a real shame because I think he could have really did something, you know. And I even was thinking, he's not going to be here long. So it was one of them that you know, it could have been different a wee bit, but that was, Rafa was a great guy to meet, and there was large spells of that season that was enjoyable, and we were quite high up in the league and we were doing okay.
He conducted himself with complete another class. He was a fantastic guy. And I think, unfortunately, I think he also had a bookend ACL injury again for Livingston when they were in the playoffs, when they went up. Might have been against Thistle, and he went down early in the game when it was ACL again. I think that was effectively his career over at that point. I seem to remember Lee Griffiths might have been around that squad as well. Am I right?
Yeah, I think he started to break into the team at that time as well, and he was scoring goals. And you know, I think that was around about the time James McPake moved to defence with Dave McKay at right back. We had a lot of good players in that squad that, you know, we actually did all right considering some of the crazy antics that were going on.
Well, did you realise when, just coming through, well, but for a start, his nickname at Livy was Sparky, right? It's not Griff, as they called him at Celtic. His nickname was Sparky. And then McManus that came after him became Sparky Jr. But did you think with Lee, great footballer, but there's maybe something not quite right at times?
I never really knew him much away from the pit, the pitches and stuff. But when he was in there, you know, he was a young guy and, you know, he was confident. He was happy to run about and do his work. But, you know, people gave him a bit of stick. He wasn't shy in giving them a wee bit back. And, you know, whether he got the name for other reasons, I thought he just got the name because he was a bright spark and he was always sprinting about, he was always running about, and you know, he was good in the air. You know, the good leap, he would hassle defenders, he would run in behind, he could shoot left foot and right foot, and you really thought, well, you know, sometimes he would shoot for anywhere and you'd be like, come on, Sparky, pass it, and then the next minute he'd put one in the top bin for about 30 yards, so you couldn't really complain. But you could certainly see that he had ability and belief in himself, and I think he was maybe 17 at that time. And the more games he played, the more he was going to show his quality, and he did that. And I met him again. We got together at Falkirk. We came back across each other, and you know, he was quiet. He just came in, did his work, and enjoyed doing his stuff, and that was it. And you know, and it was something that I remembered when he was younger, and I was like, you were such a live wire, and you were so sort of sharp witted as well as sharp with your feet. And then at his older age, he was quieting down a wee bit, and he was just sort of keeping a low profile.
I remember watching him play, and I thought, like, his acceleration in the box, just that couple of yards of quickness, I hadn't really seen that before from a striker at that level. He was so good to get over the end chances. I remember thinking, well, like, I could see him playing for Scotland one day. I could maybe see him get a couple of caps. That could be understandable. Didn't realise I'd be in the stand at Hampden watching him put two in the top corner against Joe Hart against England. That was absolutely
amazing. So, but you're right, he had a great wee shuffle where he would touch the ball at his feet and open up his face for a shot, and that, I think that done him well for his whole career.
Definitely. His technique improved so much as well, just as he kept kind of developing his game. But you moved full-time to Ross County. Was that a kind of no-brainer for you with Derek Adams? Is he somebody that was quite adamant that you were to join?
Yeah. By that time, I think Derek was manager and he wanted me to come back, and he said he had a place for me in the team and stuff, had discussions, told me what he expected. You know, I don't think they were very long discussions because we got on quite well, and he said, you know, I want you to come to the squad and bring this to it and whatever else. And I was happy enough, made the contract offer. I think it was either a 2-year deal or whatever, and a bit more stability that I was looking for, and that was it. You know, I was just planning pretty much for the summer. They make good move up. And the club up there are brilliant. You know, they help you out with where you're going to live, help you out to make sure you're looked after and you're okay. And they pretty much do as much as they can so that all you're really focusing on is the on-field stuff. And that was brilliant. And for me, at 18, 19, moving up there, you know, that's all you can ask for. And you're supported by a great club. You know, I was up there not long ago coaching with my Partick Thistle team that I coach, and even the wee kit woman's still there, wee Sue, she's brilliant. So I went and seen her, and still remembers you for when you were only 18, 19. It's got a real family vibe over at the club, and it's something that sticks to a lot of players when they go there. But even my family really enjoyed it. They were so well treated from my first spell there that they remembered it, and that was a big factor going back up.
I think that's something that's kind of that sticks out from any conversation I've had with you, Gary, in that you seem very hardworking, and you can understand why Derek Adams would want to bring you in and why you would fit in so well with Ross County. I don't think you can possibly actually answer this, because you don't come across as a hedonist, but do you think that as a young teenager going to Dingwall, is that a better idea for you off the field than footballers still living in Glasgow and they can go out to the various nightclubs or in Edinburgh? Is a kind of career progression thing, do you think going to the kind of smaller areas is something that's sensible?
Yeah, possibly. You know, we had limited options on where we were going to go out and where we could go where the manager wouldn't hear about it or find out. You know, we certainly had a good time because there was a lot of younger guys in the team, but I think we at times we knew when to have a good time and we knew when we had to knuckle down. And, you know, that was a good thing about the squad, because we were all far from our families. We were all on our own to try and do it and work together. So, you know, we may as well try and make the season as positive as possible. And you never know what could happen. We could get moves, or we could do well and win something. So, you know, we sort of had that wee mentality. Not quite as much as gang mentality, you know, but we had a lot of young guys that were up there. And when young players come through together and stuff, they generally do quite well together if there's more players in the team that they know or they can settle. And you've seen that with sort of other teams and guys coming through, that, you know, a good wee group of young players come through, usually end up doing quite well together.
The big kind of rumour that you always hear about Derek Adams is that he doesn't use profanity, he doesn't swear. Is that true? Can you confirm that?
That is true, yeah. You know, I don't know if over the years there's been some players or even sometimes any of us did stuff that maybe the odd one slipped out, but no, I can never really remember any coming out. He doesn't swear, but Martin Scott used to do impressions of him and sort of take the pee a wee bit, but in front of Derek sometimes as well, just having a laugh. And the manager was really good with that, where he would kind of have a bit of a laugh himself, but then when you knew it was time to work, then yeah, everybody certainly knew it was time to work.
Well, you mentioned Martin Scott. He actually went on to play for Livi. He scored from the halfway line in a game against Alloa, I remember. But it's when you look at the squad that you joined, players like Michael McGovern, who played in the Euros for Northern Ireland, he's with Livingston now. Scott Morrison, Richard Britton, Ian Vigors, Michael Gardine, Bart Scott, she said, Paul Lawson, Stuart Kettlewell was there, Paul DiGiacomo, Stephen Craig. Those are some incredibly talented and, well, now they're obviously experienced professionals at the age there, but that was a nucleus of a very, very talented squad that you had.
Yeah, especially when I first went up there, you know, there was guys that had done really well and had moved into sort of the squad looking to play. And for me, as you said, it was all about learning and being around these guys and soaking up as much information as I could. You know, I think we had that Alex Keddie at centre-back, him and Scott Boyd. I played a lot of games next to them, and it was really something where I was like, you know, this is time to push on and progress. You don't really have any other option, you know, because you're up there. You want to be playing. You don't want to be not playing and be away from your family and stuff like that. So for myself, it was just try to learn as much as I could for these older, more experienced guys and try and be ambitious and obviously do my best to help the team and be sort of looked upon as somebody who was contributing.
That's a very good use of the word ambitious, because there's some clubs that are in that level that are happy being at that level. They don't want to come up because sometimes it can cost them too much money to get into the top flight. But I've always had that feeling that Roy McGregor and Ross County were an ambitious club, but they were desperate to get up to the top division. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, Roy's a very ambitious guy, you know, and he wants to do well. And he sort of kept that club going and keeps a lot of stuff going up there. But yeah, I think we were in no doubt that Roy was wanting to win leagues and win competitions and do as much as he could. So, Yeah, that was, he was always in about the club, but not always in about, but I seen him a lot more often when I first went there when I was younger than I did when I left. So he obviously felt that he'd had it in competent hands and left Derek or whatever to run it. But when I first went in, I remember seeing him in and about the squad and in about the team at times. And no, he was a really nice guy and he'd done really well with us. And during the spell that I was there, I think we did really well for him. So, you know, he was always appreciative and the staff up there were brilliant with the team.
It was a good start in that season, that season 2009-2010. You'd only 4 losses before Christmas, 5 losses in the league before the end of February. So it was good form. And your first title in this derby against Inverness, you won 3-1 at the end of August. What's it? We all know what does it mean. The Old Firm game just recently been played as we're recording. Everybody knows about the Old Firm. We know about the Dundee derby, the Edinburgh derby. What's the Highland derby like to play in?
Brilliant. Really enjoyed it. You know, for myself, it was a pumped up atmosphere and it was really good. You know, it was exciting. There was adrenaline. You know, I think there was actually a few of them on TV and stuff. You know, that's when maybe Alba started doing some of the games and they were on the TV and your family was coming up for it. And I think the stadiums were quite packed as well. You know, you're getting 7,000-8,000 at the game and enjoying it. And we were in the same league, which had been the first time for a wee while, because I think Cali had either been in the Prem and came down and we'd moved up into the Championship. So it was the first for a wee while and there was a lot of sort of hysteria around it at the time. So no, the games were brilliant. They were always good games to play in and sort of highly adrenaline and getting fired in. So no, it was really games that I enjoyed. I think we did quite well to start with. We won a couple of them in that first season.
Yeah, you beat them in your first game at home in November against them, 2-1. Is it, you always hear about the pressure on Old Firm fans or fans of Hibs and Hearts in the week leading up to a derby, like players will go into a shop somewhere and they'll have somebody tell them, remind them how important the derby is. Do you get that when you're up in Dingwall? Or is it a more relaxed kind of nature up there?
Probably more relaxed in how they approach it. You know, they kind of saying, oh, he's looking forward to the game. It'd be great to beat them, stuff like that, rather than probably a bit more intimidation that goes on south of that. But no, the fans get involved and they support you well up there and they were always wanting you to do well. So it was more of a sort of positive vibe, I think. There probably was a wee bit of pressure, but they were a bit more positive about it. And, you know, when we did win and we were doing well, the support up there was brilliant, actually. They had a stand behind one of the goals called the JLN. They always sang and the team was well supported. And as I said, I was lucky enough that my spell there, we were doing very well. So it was always going quite good and the fans were singing and keeping the team going. And it was always a lift for us.
Did you ever get recognised in the street by fans and get any stick?
Probably other teams, not being Ross County, but no. It was never too bad that there was any stick for us, pretty much. Maybe on the odd night out or that, when we were in Inverness, we'd get stick for Cali fans, but other than that, it was nothing that I can remember.
Well, it was a kind of odd season because it was a success and it wasn't success because clubs definitely aiming for promotion, but once January hit, the league form tailed off a bit, quite a lot of draws, a few more losses. But you had a very kind of interesting distraction because the Scottish Cup was going on at that point. I mean, it started in November. You'd beaten Beck Rangers 5-1 at Victoria Park. You then had Inverurie Local Works, which is a kind of derby game. It's localish, former kind of Highland League teams. You won 4-0. But the time you beat Stirling Albion 9-0 at the start of February, were you starting to think this is turning into something a wee bit magical here?
I think that was probably the season, yeah, where the team started to build a lot of belief. And, you know, like you say, it was just a wee bit of, you know, oh, we might be in with a chance here. Not that we could ever win anything, you know, but it's like, oh, we could go around further. Or we could go around further. And we always put that on us. And, you know, the manager was always wanting telling us that we were the underdogs. You know, people expected us not to do well and stuff like that. And I think that built up a wee bit of, you know, the team wanted to show people how good we were. you know, at times you'd maybe say, you know, other people have been let go for clubs and we're all here together. We need to show them and prove them wrong. And I think a lot of that probably did move into the players and sort of got a wee bit of chip on their shoulders where they're like, you know what, we're going to stick together. We're going to show. And as you say, the more the rounds went on, it was probably like, well, why not go again? Why not just keep going, keep the run going? And it sort of built up this sort of inner belief. And the fans probably bought into it as well. You know, it was big, exciting games for them, and cup games are always quite special. So I think it just sort of started to steamroll on its own.
Well, you were drawn against Hibs in the quarterfinals of the cup. I mean, and that's at Easter Road. That's a tough tie. There's no way you're getting through that. You go a goal down to Colin Dish after 7 minutes, you could understand Ross County collapsing. What, Hibs do you a favour, score an own goal. But then Riordan in the 19th minute, they score again, 2-1 Hibs. And that wasn't the case. The resolve at Ross County, you kept fighting. You got a Michael Gardine goal in the 79th minute. Did you have a sense when you were playing in that game that we're not out of this? This is a match we're in fighting terms with Hibs.
I think if anything, what you could say about our team most of the time, you know, was that we were resilient. We were never going to really chuck it. And, you know, Hibs were a really good team at that time. You know, they might not have had them all playing on that day, but they certainly did in the replay. And I think when Riordan maybe scored the second, I'm sure it was a peach, or he just flicked it at his feet and scored. And I think they maybe thought when they went 2-1 up, they thought, right, they've had their wee goal, you know, that's us 2-1. We're going to maybe see this game out. But I think large spells of that game, we actually played decent, gave a good account of ourselves, sort of hassled them and harried them and had a few of our own chances. And then when Michael Gardine scores near the end, I think the last 10 minutes, it's really us that's pushing for the win and had a few late sort of chances or a few late blocks where we had them in their box rather than the other way about. So we certainly went back to Dingwall with a positive view, thinking more we're going to take them in the second leg rather than thinking, you know, how we're going to keep them out.
A lot of times when fans see that it's a Premier team drawn against a team in the Championship, the fans think automatically we're going to win that match because we're in the division above. Is that the case for players? Because players are actually on the pitch. They know what the differences are in quality, and the differences in quality are minute. Professional football is somebody maybe having 1% more fitness, or somebody just having the ability to make two or three passes in a game that nobody else can see. That's the difference from getting you from a high echelon team, just a kind of normal team. Do you notice that when you're getting draws as well? Do you think, oh, the division above, that's a terrible draw? Or is it more of a case of it doesn't matter who it is, we're getting stuck in?
Possibly. I can see the sort of, oh, it's a Premier League team, we're up against it vibe. But, you know, Derek Adams is a very smart man. And I think if you look at our squad, or even our team on that day, a lot of players there were from Premier League teams, even as a youth. You know, you had Michael McGovern, Michael Gardine, Paul Lawson, who came through at Celtic. You had Paul DiGiacomo, who had played in the Premier League. You had Scott Boyd, myself, who came from Livingston. You had Scott Morrison at left-back, who came for Aberdeen. You had Stevie Craig, I think at that time, who'd come through at Aberdeen and played for a few teams. Andy Barrowman, who came through down in England at Birmingham and stuff. So, you know, a lot of the players, Jimmy Scott, Richie Britton as well, came through at Livy. So a lot of sort of players that came through it there, maybe not played loads of games in the Premier League, but we sort of had an attitude where that was where we wanted to get back to, or that's where we wanted to get to, you know. And with Stuart Kettlewell in our team, who had nothing but dig and desire, you know, and then he had the ability to go with it. So a lot of that mixed in was really good for us, and it was a lot of positive stuff that built on that. And, you know, Derek had a real desire where he wouldn't let any of these boys know try their best and not give their all. So when you come up against that, and cup games are always sort of the underdog team does better, but when you come up against that, and Hibs would have had to be absolutely giving their all on the day, sort of beat us, and that's how we felt.
Why, and this is a really kind of interesting question, why is it cup games are different in the way that they're played out on the pitch than league games, in the sense of the kind of I don't want to say scrappy, but they become more intense, more physical, but it's the same. You could play the same team in the league and it'd be a completely different pattern of play. Is it atmosphere from the fans? Is it a different pattern of play set out by the coach?
I think you're spot on there. A lot of it comes for the fans. You know, I've always said that teams have been at, or when I've coached my young players, you know, the fans are vital, and if you can get them on board early doors, it changes the game for your own team. I've never understood sort of negativity or booing for the crowd, because it's only going to have one sort of response. But, you know, cup games where the players can maybe relax to an extent where it's, you know, it's a free hit. We're the underdogs here. Hibs are expected to beat us. What have we got to lose? Pressure's off, kind of thing. And the fans buy into that as well. You know, they think, right, first half, we'll just support the team and we'll go. And like you said, you know, down at Easter Road, we equalised. It was 2-1. I think most of the Ross County fans would happily have took that at half-time, going in 2-1 down. And they'd have been like, we're in this, we can make a game of this. And the manager was sending that message on at half-time. Come on, lads, go out there, do your best. We could, you know, we can score again. And went out and did that. And, you know, I think when we took them back to Dingwall, you see that, you know, we scored a late winner. We were the team pushing, we kept going, and then that's how it sort of went. And the fans were used to a wee bit of that from us, for, like you said, for previous performances. So they knew to sort of keep going for the 90 minutes because the team would keep going as well. And I think that was a great rapport that we'd built.
So I've stood beside a manager when a draw was getting made. I think it was actually John Robertson at Livingston. I've stood beside a manager and I've seen his reaction, and then I've seen what he said to the press afterwards, which are two completely different things. So you would have seen the draw was made for the semi-final and it was Celtic. Is it a case of, oh, fantastic, we get to play one of the biggest clubs in Scotland, or is it a, oh no, it's Celtic?
Probably a wee bit of both. You know, it's a wee bit of, oh, I hope we don't get absolutely hammered. But a lot of it is, you know, we had a really good bonding as a team. And I think we had built up a great team spirit that by that time we were just like, you know, who cares? Let's just go there and do our best. And as I said previously, we had two or three guys that had been at Celtic before with a wee point to prove. And they were like, well, let's get into them. You know, that was the attitude. And that's how we went into that game. So it was certainly something that we sort of approached with a free spirit, if that makes sense. You know, it wasn't something that we were too stressed about.
What did it feel like trotting out at Hampden, and what would have been a capacity for the biggest game of your career at that point?
It was amazing. You know, my family were all in the crowd. Loads of the players had their families in the crowd. And it was just something that everybody was delighted to do. And, you know, I think it was on Sky as well. So, you know, there's a big sort of view on the game. But for us, you know, the manager all week had just instilled, this is what we're going to do, this is the game plan, this is what we need to do, stuff like that. And he was just sort of more focused on the game, not letting the players get carried away with the hysteria. Don't think we sort of worried about that. And we just went out and, you know, you're against Celtic, the first 10, 15 minutes, Robbie Keane's playing up front, stuff like that. So it was more just about, let's just keep it simple, do what we're good at. We're not expected to come out and be playing amazing, so let's just play how we can play, and then we'll build into it after that.
Who was your direct opponent in that game? Can you remember?
I think first half I was up against McGeady, and then second half I was up against Samaras.
You've got about 150 international caps in your back pocket there for well, that one then, Gary, well done.
I know. I actually did all right, and actually did not too bad usually against fast players, and Samaras was rapid, so did not too bad that game.
Well, 2-0 win, Dagan Scott with the goals, and you're in the final a month later against Dundee United. You've got to think, against United, we've got a good chance.
Yeah, for sure. You know, but Dundee United were flying high that time. I think they were in the top four, maybe even the top three. So many good players getting Scotland call-ups, and they were really flying on a high at that time. But I think I remember a lot of the press readings were that we either, their season continued or our season continued up until the league, and they maybe got a rest before us, and their manager was at our games watching. And I think you see in the final, they were well prepared for us. They knew exactly how to play against us. They combated sort of our strengths, which was our wing-backs getting forward and then support and stuff like that. And on that day, I think they were the better team. They probably deserved it, you know, and we could try and give it all, but you know, it was just a day where it just didn't go for us. And, you know, sometimes you have to just hold your hands up and say that they were better on us on the day and they deserve to win.
I remember this game very well. I was doing the subtitles for it on the BBC. And I thought actually, I thought it was, that it wasn't 3-0 that was in it, to be honest. It was a lot tighter until it got up until the hour mark. And the build up to this game, did you, well, first of all, was this the most popular you'd ever been in your life? And had you, what was the big changes in the build up? Because you've played countless games of football at that point. You've prepared, you've got your meals, you've got your rest, everything you do. Probably some players have got superstitions as well. You probably want to carry over. What was the main kind of difference in a cup final week than you would get to a normal game of football?
Obviously, like you said, you know, there's a lot more interest in you. There's a lot more interviews getting asked for. There's a lot more information. You're doing interviews. You're doing stuff like that. So, you know, there is a involvement where you start to get involved in the excitement and a wee bit of the hype. But, you know, we'd beat Celtic the match before. You know, that was the big hype. That was whatever for us. So, if anything, it was Dundee United and it was going to be similar to what it would against Celtic. Obviously, we knew it was the Scottish Cup final and we'd never been there, but there was such hysteria also around beating Celtic and actually deserving and beating them comfortably, you know. So we had already took a bit of it. And I think the manager was very intelligent again that he'd roomed the players who were playing next to each other. You know, so I was in a room with Stevie Craig and Steve, I was playing right back, Stevie was playing right mid. So we were going to be spending the next game playing together. We did the same against Celtic. You know, I think the two centre-backs were together. Left back was with the left mids. Just wee silly things like that where, you know, you can sit and have a chat with somebody and you know the tactics, you know the formation, and you're spending the night before together and the build-up and you're like, right, you're going to look out for each other. You know what I mean? So, as you said, they've played a lot of games by then and it's, you know, you kind of have to just look at it as it's another game. You know, if you look too much into it, then it's going to be a bit sort of hard for you to concentrate. But as you said, I think we've done well for certainly the first half and then up to about 50, 55 minutes. And then when they scored, I think they sort of got a big lift to their fans and their fan base. It'd been so long since they'd ever done something again. And it just sort of took over and the adrenaline and the lift they got to that, it just went 2 and 3.
To a team once the wrong end of a cup final result comes about, because we know what happens to the winning team. You know, you've got all the press that you do, the antics and pitch, going to various functions afterwards. What happens to a team that, and it's at the end of the season as well, is it basically just right, boys, back in the bus and then silence for the next 5 hours back to Dingwall, or what actually takes place?
I think we actually went back to the Westerwoods Hotel, which is where Dundee United were staying as well. So that wasn't a great feeling, but, you know, the manager was delighted to a point with how we'd done. Obviously, we'd, like you said before, we'd finished the season, maybe not doing as well as we could have, but who could have asked for the run in the cup that we'd had? So the manager wanted to make a point of going back and still celebrating the success and the stuff that we'd done together that season, which is totally understandable. You know, that was at that point something that a club of that size hadn't really done for a while. So, you know, celebrate how well you've done, enjoy the time with your family, you know, because it was a big event for a lot of people's families as well, and they would have just been as upset as the players and gutted for the players. So you may as well enjoy the occasion and everything that's went on, and then when it's time to knuckle down and get back ready for the next season, then that's what we're going to do. But, you know, obviously, there was heartbreak after the game, and it's upsetting. I think the manager and the players are one where, you know, we're going to enjoy it. We enjoy being a team together, and you just have to get over the sort of being gutted.
Do you think the success in the cup perhaps lent itself towards the dip in form in the league in the second half of the season?
It's very strange. I don't remember thinking that or feeling that at the time, you know, because everybody was on a high, but maybe it made us a bigger target for other teams, I don't know. But, you know, I think we were always expected to do well, or we certainly expected ourselves to do well. And, you know, at times it was a tough league to be in. You know, it was hard to go places, and there was a lot of good teams in the league at the times. And it was difficult. But, you know, I think once it sort of got to the Dundee, the Celtic game, and then the Dundee United game, obviously a lot of focus was on that because the league form had fell away.
Is it exhausting mentally when you've got a game like that coming up?
It's exhausting at the point that sometimes, maybe because I don't think we had a winter break then either, so there was maybe a lot of call-offs. And, you know, in those spells where you're playing Saturday, Tuesday, and you're trying to catch up, and then if you're doing well in the cup, you're playing more midweek games than other teams, and games are lining up and carrying on. So, you know, there was a spell when we maybe had a wee bit of burnout where the players were knackered and we'd maybe played 60-odd games that season.
The following season, we'll kind of skip over that. We'll skip to the 2011-2012 season, if that's okay with you. Second game of the season, absolutely hammered 5-1 by Hamilton Accies, New Douglas Park. No way you guys are doing anything that season. Not get gutted 5-1 by Accies. That's it. Write the season off. You're done. What happened after that Accies game? Because whatever role you got off the manager, you didn't lose a game for the rest of the season in the league.
To be fair, I think that game we got somebody sent off early and we got a bit of a doing. And I remember there was players arguing at half-time. And then I think the manager actually came in and told us to shut up so that he could shout at us. But I think he did see a bit of fight and a bit of spirit in the team. And I think it built then because there'd been a lot of new players coming in and mixing into that squad. And, you know, it was early doors. But I think that game, you know, we kind of felt a wee bit embarrassed ourselves. We were like, right, come on, this can't be happening. We're much better than this. And we kind of instilled a sort of togetherness after that. Because as I said, see, when you're traveling on buses together for 4 hours most weeks and you're spending a lot of time together, it does help. And, you know, that really, really did help us that season. And yeah, the fact that they beat us 5-1 on the second day, I think, gave us all a bit of a shock and a bit of, right, come on, we need to go here. And then, you know, to go to the rest of the season not getting beat again in the league was amazing for us.
Well, you made the most appearances that season for Ross County. You had 43 appearances. You got a goal to your game as well, a goal to your name as well. Do you think that was your best run of form as a player?
I think so. It was one of those seasons where I really enjoyed that season. And I think Derek always knew that I could be trusted and be counted upon. And that's probably why he took me to other teams in the future after that, you know. But as I said, I had a good ambition. I wanted to go out. I wanted to play as many games as I could. I was really fit. I was strong. And I used that to my strengths. You know, I would run up and down the pitch as much as I could. I would try and get on the ball, create stuff, and try and defend as best I could. So, you know, it was something that I applied myself to the games. And the manager obviously liked that and liked what he'd seen and just tried to apply it to the team as best I could. Like I said, I wanted to feel a good part of that team. It was probably the first team I'd moved on to since, you know, your first team, you're always looked at as a young player if you come through. And then this was my first sort of pro team where I'd been signed as such and wanted to show and make a sort of name for myself as a good player. And I think certainly that season before I left, I did that.
The Ross County were about finding themselves in a position they'd never been in before, the top flight. What was the feeling like around the club when you got promoted? Because you clinched promotion a few games before the end of the season. You knew you were going up. Is it different from a cup feeling because it's more extended?
Yeah, I think it was an amazing season in that sense where, you know, I think from September to about December, we just kept beating everybody. We just kept beating the bigger teams about us. I think we went to Dundee and we beat Dundee. We went back to sort of Greenock Morton, beat them. We went down to Firhill, we beat Thistle. You know, Falkirk came up to us, we beat them. We went away to Livy, I think we won 3-0. Then I think we went to Raith Rovers at the start of December. We beat them 4-2. You know, so we were beating a lot of the teams round about us and we were beating them quite convincingly. So it was something that, you know, you start to think, right, who's the team that's actually going to come out here and beat us or whatever else? So the fact that we were sort of beating the teams round about us was something that was massive and something that Derek really kept on us with, you know. I think there was a couple of games we went with some draws as well, but think that the fact that we were also grinding the draws out was something to keep positive about and something that we were happy with. So, you know, there was always a positive spirit and just this real, it almost became by Christmas, it was like, you know, let's keep this undefeated run going. And that was a real focus of the team and sort of caused a lot of desire. I remember one, I think it was possibly Falkirk. Boxing Day away, we equalised late on and there was just a real celebration in the team, you know, like to not get beat. There was a real desire to not lose games and not get beat. And I think that game, you know, we were buzzing and it was a great atmosphere back on the bus up the road again and the players were delighted.
Well, it was kind of, I don't think bittersweet's the right word, but you were an integral part of Ross County getting promoted, but you didn't get to enjoy Ross County being promoted because you moved at the end of that season. You were off to St Johnstone. Was that end of a contract and being poached, or was it a different type of move?
It was a bit of both, to be honest. You know, I'd had contact with St Johnstone maybe around about February, March time, but I'd sort of said to them, you know, I'm focused on this. I don't want to speak too much. I'm interested, but I won't want to sort anything too soon. And, you know, because I wanted to be loyal to Derek and the team and I'd give my all, which obviously I did by playing the most minutes and the most games and winning. But it was certainly a factor, you know, as a young 18, 19-year-old, moved away from your family for four and a half years and I had a young son at the time as well. It was certainly about, you know, I could be two and a half hours closer to home. Or even live back at home and move back at home and be with my son a lot more and be close to your family, you know, and you were going into the Premier League with Ross County anyway. And I still had the chance to go into St Johnstone. Obviously, St Johnstone had the added bonus. They were in Europe. They were doing really well at the time. And that was a big draw for me. And obviously, my first season there, we go and finish third or something in the league and play in Europe. So, you know, it was certainly something that I really enjoyed. And again, the only sort of big issue was sort of family orientated, what I did put out. I don't think Roy believed me. He was a wee bit unhappy with me, but it was, as I said, I really enjoyed my time in that club and my family certainly loved the treatment they got at that club. So it's something that I've always held fondly. And when I've went back, I've always been sort of treated fondly as well. So it's a club that I've always really enjoyed and loved, to be honest, with how I got treated there. And it was something that, it was a tough decision to make, but, you know, when you're from down south and, you know, you've been 4.5 years away, it was something that I felt was the right move for me, and it certainly turned out that way.
Well, was it Steve Lomas that was the manager at St Johnstone when you joined?
Yeah, it was Stevie Lomas that signed me there, and the first season there was brilliant. Again, I think I went there, and I think possibly the first few months we went like 11 games unbeaten. And a few of the guys have told about the unbeaten run at Ross County and that, and they were making up jokes and laughing with me and whatever. And he was like, oh my God, this guy keeps winning and stuff like that. But then eventually it got beat anyway. But no, we had a good run there as well. I think we were in a wee run, we beat Celtic and stuff. And it was just surreal for me, your first season up in the Premier League and just enjoying yourself and doing well. And then we finished third.
What was Steve Lomas like to work with? Because he seems quite charismatic.
Again, it was brilliant. I really liked him. His training was very good. His information was good. Sometimes he would join in training. He was high energy. You know, he liked to be part of the squad almost and involved with the boys. And, you know, he done really well with us because he ended up getting a move to Millwall after that. So, you know, it was just, again, something that I really enjoyed. He liked me. I played a lot under him. And it was an atmosphere that I really enjoyed. You know, you've moved up a level, there's better players, stuff like that. You've got to adapt. I certainly had to adapt my defensive side in my footballing game, you know, and learn how to defend more. We were quite a battling team who could still play football, but certainly we made it tough for teams to play against us. So, you know, I was a bit of a flying fullback at the time at Ross County, almost a wing back. It was just all about getting forward, putting crosses in, trying to set goals up, doing overlaps, whereas at St Johnstone, you know, as much as that was part of my game, the other half of my game was, you know, you have to be in here and be a resolute defender and do your job and be tough to beat and make sure you're covering at the back post and all the stuff that comes with sort of being a good fullback.
Well, you got to play European football for the first time in your season, in your career, and you're Scott Brown's one of the more difficult clubs you've ever had to play against. Who was it you drew in Europe, Guy?
I believe it was Eskispor, who actually built up a good rapport with St Johnstone after that. But nah, definitely not one of the easiest teams to pronounce.
It definitely isn't. That's why I got you to do it, not me. What was the main difference between European football and kind of football you've played in Scotland? How does it differ in the approach? Is it difficult to travel? Do you have disruption to your routine that can affect you in the games?
Possibly, but I loved it. You know, I grew up watching Champions League games, going watching Rangers play in Europe, and had a real sort of thirst for getting involved in that stuff, something that I always wanted to achieve in my career, and was delighted to get involved in some games like that, you know. But going away out there, it was roasting. You know, that was one of the biggest. We trained at night. I think you go out and it's a Wednesday night, you train in preparation for the game on the Thursday night. And, you know, you come in, it's like 9 p.m. or whatever, and it's still absolutely sweating. And you're like, oh my God. And then the manager's having meetings about who you're playing against. The next day, I was playing right back, and you're playing against this guy called Dede, who's played like 300 games for Borussia Dortmund before he came to this team. They had Kamara, who was up front for Celtic at some point, and a lot of other players who played for Turkey, you know. So I think the quality level where you're really like, oh, right, I better make sure I'm switched on, concentrated and on my game here. And I think we actually did all right out there. We lost 2-0, but I think we actually did not too bad, considering it was a lot of the players' first sort of involvement in a stage like that, and we played not too bad. That, you know, I thought, well, we could be in with a wee chance here, but they had a lot of quality players, and I think the biggest difference, like you were asking, is, you know, any wee slip or any mistake or any position that you're not in that's not correct, these guys would spot it in a second, and they were on it.
Well, you're totally right. They ended up taking over from Steve Lomas, and he got St Johnstone into the cup final in 2014, and it was a chance for revenge against Dundee United, who you could actually argue they maybe had a stronger team than when he played you when you were at Ross County. But
yep,
it was kind of cruel for you as a professional, Gary, because you were a named as a sub, but you didn't get on. Is that something that perhaps just kind of niggles at you a wee bit in your career, if there was just like one thing you could have, is just a run out onto that pitch?
Possibly, but no, it's never ever bothered me, the fact that I played a full game in a Scottish Cup final anyway, you know. So it was just something that I was very fortunate and very lucky to be involved in two finals, never mind, you know, one. So for myself, I've always felt lucky for that. You know, there's other guys out there that haven't been lucky enough to experience that. So for myself, you know, I'd played a lot of games in the cup leading up to that. I was a vital part of the squad, and to win it, you know, I think all of the players felt like that, and they felt as part of it. So, you know, we were delighted. I think the manager, his tactics against Dundee United that year, I think we'd beat them nearly every game, you know. So as much as you want to be on, you know, I think the manager had their number, so it's hard to grumble with any issues, you know. So, you know, I think it was brilliant to be part of that, brilliant to win it on the day. And, you know, like you said, a bit of revenge for myself and my family to go back and get a winner's medal this time.
You weren't kind of like walking, kind of, no, you're doing your warm-ups. You weren't kind of running past the manager going, oh, Dave Mackay looks like he's limping, Gaffer. You might want to take him off.
It was quite a tight game right up until the end, you know. So you're also like, you know, don't want to be the guy that might come on and what happens if they score. So, nah, I think we had a really good bond with the squad that season, and, you know, it showed with the reactions after we'd won it as well.
Well, one of the players that was in that squad is Chris Owolumo.
Yep.
Who, by that point, had produced his famous miss against Norway, and knowing how true footballers can be, like, you must have given him stick for that by the time he joined the squad.
I don't know if I gave him stick about that, but I used to jump about and attack him in training and fight and wrestle him and stuff. But he was a great big guy, you know, a really nice big guy. And actually, once I got to know him, I don't think I ever brought it up, but I actually felt bad for him a wee bit, because, you know, he had good touches, he had good feet for a guy that size. And as you said, it was just one of those things maybe in his career where he's like, how has that happened? You know, if that goes in, he could have maybe went on and been a Scotland's hero or whatever. But he was a great guy who deserved to do well. And I think, you know, it was just something. But yeah, I was daft enough to jump about and try and wrestle with him and stuff. And he was like The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. He would just throw me about and battle me.
He really is. He looks like he should be playing in the NFL. He's huge.
Nah, he's some size. But nah, a lovely big guy and a good experience for him as well to come to us and be involved and win a trophy.
Did you keep that winner's medal in a very safe place?
I think I actually went into the crowd and gave it straight to my dad. So he was delighted with that. But yeah, I think he's still got it to this day. So stored away, making sure it'll be remembered.
Good. Well, you moved on to Partick Thistle for a season, and then you made one of the furthest moves away from your family possible, Plymouth Argyle. And you spoke about it earlier. Was that Derek Adams' influence getting you down there?
Yeah, I think I'd agreed at the time to stay at Partick Thistle with Alan Archibald. I knew a 2-year contract. And then when I spoke to the chairman, things weren't quite adding up. And I was like, I don't know what's going on here. And then I spoke to Archie and he was kind of, it's like, you know, take care of yourself. And I flew away to America that summer. I think I was in Las Vegas and Derek was in the playoffs at the time at Plymouth. And they didn't manage to make it up and they phoned me. And I was in Vegas. And he was like, do you want to come? I need to try and win promotion here. We've worked together, blah, blah. And I think it was all agreed within about 10 minutes. That was it. And then went back to enjoying myself. And then text my parents and that. And I was like, great, going to have to be moving in about a month. And they were like, wow, like you couldn't have picked a further away place. But it's tainted as the English Riviera. It's supposed to be sunny and whatever. So I was trying to sell it to them.
Did they think you kind of, did they miss you? They think, oh, Argyle, let's go too far away. That's just up the coast.
I know, but the support has been amazing for me throughout my career, obviously my life, but it was another place for them to go and explore and go and travel. And they probably explored and seen more down there than I managed to because of all the games. And again, it was another part of the country that they loved visiting. And it certainly was. I think it was sunny all the way up to about mid-November, end of November. So it was a place they got to enjoy.
What was the main difference for you as a footballer between the football that you played in Devon and the football that you played in Scotland?
I'd probably have to say the intensity, in the sense, you know, you're playing 60, 70 games a season down there. You're playing in 3 or 4 cups. You're playing, I think it's 20, 24 teams, and you're playing 2 games a season. So the games are ramped up right away. You know, the league season's maybe 38 to 40 games or maybe even more in League 2. And then you've got all the cup games added in that and you've got all the travelling, you know. So the intensity on your body is such that might not be every single game where the intensity is more and saying that it's a better league or it's better this and that, but the intensity on your body and the amount of travelling you have to do over the season, the amount of preparation, the amount of time away for your family, the amount of travelling that we had to do to play teams as well, you know, because at times you're getting home at 2 and 3 in the morning and that can take a bit of a spell. So it was getting used to that for me, you know, when at Ross County, your longest journey was maybe 4 hours, whereas your average journey at Plymouth was 6-7 hours.
And did the fans take to you in Plymouth?
I think they did, yeah. The first season especially, we did really well and played a lot of games. We won promotion, we came second, joint points with the team that won it. And, you know, the celebrations and the partying was brilliant. Really enjoyed myself there. Second season again, enjoyed myself. Maybe never played every single game by the end and stuff, but I think we finished 7th. We missed the playoffs by a couple of points to get the playoffs to go up into the championship, you know. So that's what, you know, for me was such a successful move, and to do so well in a season or two, to win promotion and then be on the verge of getting into the playoffs in your second season was brilliant, to be honest. It was something that probably never expected to happen when I first moved down there.
And you decided to move a bit closer to home, but still the wrong side of the border. You joined Carlisle in 2018. How did that move happen?
I think a guy phoned me and said, how would you fancy doing all the same travelling, but just for the opposite side? And I was like, sign me up for that. But spoke to the manager at the time, John Sheridan. He wanted to bring me in, and I thought, right, this is a lot closer to home now. So, you know, I was about an hour and a half away from where I lived in Glasgow. And it was a good move, still playing in England and still playing at a good club. So it was a good move for me. It was a move that I really enjoyed, and the fact that, you know, I ended up working with Stephen Presley midway through that season as well, who was a manager that I'd came up against when he was at Falkirk and I was at Ross County, and put up a great relationship with him. And he's a really great guy who I still keep in touch with to this day, who always comes out and offers his help and sort of passes on as much as he can about his experience and his knowledge. So that was a move that I'll always be thankful for those reasons as well.
Did you have to call him Gaffer, or could you call him Elvis?
I never tested that out. I called him Gaffer anyway. I never dropped the Elvis in there, but he can be ferocious when he likes, so I wouldn't have liked to upset him.
And you ended up leaving Carlisle after a season and moved to Falkirk, so a lot closer to home at Falkirk. But a club that had fallen from its way, perhaps you could argue. I think that they're doing well at the moment in the third tier. They're definitely going up, but a big club that had lost its way. They invested heavily in youth. Then they decided to rip up their youth system and go with more experienced pros. Was that why you were brought in to bring some veteran stability?
Yes, so I'd actually been approached the season before when they were in the midst of doing that. And, you know, something where I was like, I'm unsure about that. And I had the Carlisle offer and I thought that was better for me. So I took it. And then at the end of that season, I was moving home to be a bit closer again. And that was an offer that came towards me. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to go for it this time. Like you said, they were trying to add a bit of veterans and trying to build on the squad and get back up after what had been sort of a really bad season for them. So, you know, I did go in at quite a tumultuous time, and I don't think it got much better. You know, we had a really good season, the first sort of season, which COVID cut short. And then, you know, we had largely good spells at the seasons there, but we kind of just kept falling away at the end and couldn't see it out. And it was so disappointing, but it's delighted to see them up now, and they'll be in Championship next year because it is a brilliant club. There's lots of good people there, and I really hope to see them do well. And actually, the first season there, I actually loved it, and I was playing really good football. I'd moved into centre defensive midfield, and I was really enjoying my football there. It was probably the best I'd felt for a wee while.
How did you feel about playing on the artificial pitch? Because it's a divisive subject. Some players like it, some players hate it. What was your take on it?
I didn't mind it, to be honest. It wasn't ideal. It took a bit of adjusting. You know, my legs were sore the first couple of weeks. It did take its spell because in England you're playing in grass every week and stuff like that. But I'd came through at Livingston and we trained on Astro every day. They had the Astro pitch at the back, so came through there and I trained on Astro every day when I was younger. So, you know, it wasn't a massive deal where I was going to be like, oh, I'm not coming, you know. Some games, our home pitch would be better than the team we were playing away anyway, and that was grass. So it was just something that came more into it. It made a lot of monetary sense for the club at the time and other clubs at that level. So can fully understand it, you know, to get matches on and to play on a decent surface. So it was never something that I had a big issue with. And I think we actually did well a lot that season on the surface.
And then you ended up moving to East Kilbride. A very ambitious club. Yep. What was your take in playing the East Kilbride?
Again, I really enjoyed it. Moved to a squad that was a really competitive squad with a few guys that I knew. I'd been with Neil McLaughlin at Partick Thistle when he was a young boy, and I was sort of an experienced pro at the time. And it was great to link up with Neil again. He's absolutely brilliant at that level. You know, he's untouchable. He scores so many goals. Linked up with Bob McHugh, who I'd played against so many times over the years. Johnny Page, played against him. Ronan Hughes, I'd played against him when he was at Hamilton and stuff as well. So there was a lot of familiar faces there as well. And Kevin Rutkiewicz, had been up against him as he was a manager as well. So I knew a lot of players, and like you said, they were ambitious and they wanted to do well. And for large spells of that season, we did. And then, you know, again, it just tapered off and it became a bit more difficult.
Well, that was your kind of winding down at that point, Gary. Have you moved kind of full time into coaching now after winding down as a player?
Pretty much. I'm still playing and coaching at St. Caddock. Do you know, 7, 8, 9 has moved from there, from East Kilbride to there. The manager, Martin Fellows, is a young up and coming manager who's doing very well. We've got our assistant manager, Mark McKenna, who is Steve Clark's right-hand man with the video analysis for Scotland. So, you know, one of the big sort of reasons for me moving was to learn for these guys as well and be involved with young modern managers coming through who've got a great amount of experience. And then, you know, a lot of the same players have moved to the same team. Neil's there, Ronan's there, Bob McHugh's there, you know, BJ Cole, Alan Lithgow, players like that, all players that are very quite experienced at that level. So it's been a good season so far, and getting to coach them sometimes, being involved and moving into my coaching side, involved at Partick Thistle just now with their 18s is something that's been an enjoyable step for me.
Is it definitely a career path you see for yourself in the future?
I never thought it was when I was a young guy at Ross County, and you're enjoying yourself and you're probably doing a lot of stuff that, you know, you're partying and you're young and enjoying it, that I thought coaching wasn't on my forefront. But it certainly is now. I like sort of helping the young guys develop, helping them come through. And at some point, I think I would like to be a manager and see how it goes. I went and managed Strathclyde University team for a season there and helped them win the league. So it was something that was really enjoyable, and sort of helping them develop players and seeing them do well is something that I really enjoy.
Well, I think everybody will agree that Strathclyde University is definitely the premier university in Glasgow. He says this is alma mater. Well, we come to the end of the interview, Gary, but I've got some quick fire questions for you because you were always the quickest in the pitch. Who was the best opponent you played against?
The best player that I played against?
Yep.
The best player I was probably up against was maybe Divock Origi. We played against Liverpool in the Cup, and I was up against him. And then, you know, I think a season or two after that, I was scoring in Champions League finals and stuff. So I'm sure there is probably better players that were on that pitch, but I was directly up against him that day, and I went on and scored in a Champions League final. So I'd have to give him that.
Who's your favourite teammate?
My favourite teammate? Tough one. There's probably a few, but one of the closest ones I had was at St. Johnston. It was like a wee group. It was me, Gary McDonald, and Mikey O'Halloran. So we had a wee group that got on really well together, and I've kept in touch with both of them for a long time. So yeah, probably them.
Right. I don't think you've done have many options to the next question. Your best goal scored. You're a fullback. You've never been to score, but...
Probably my goal against St. Johnston for Partick Thistle. It was a half volley for outside the box, and obviously being against your own team as well, not that that made me try any harder, but found myself outside the box and managed to score. So no, I was delighted with that. So it's probably one of my best. I did score a goal for St. Johnston where I went on a dribble about halfway, ran all the way down the line, cut in and put it in the top corner. But I think the half volley for Partick Thistle was probably better.
Do you know what to do as a defender when you score? Do you have to kind of work it? Do you have to practice it beforehand?
I never scored that often, and my celebrations were really great. So I think just turning around and being as excited as possible and waiting for somebody to jump on me to take the light off me was my reaction.
What you'd be doing nowadays, you'd be looking straight at VAR to see if they're going to check it.
I know. I'm lucky that I never scored that many goals to be involved in stuff like that, or you'd be devastated, wouldn't you?
What was the best stadium you've played at?
Best stadium? I really like the Rosenborg Stadium. We played away against Rosenborg and beat them 1-0. And for like a young guy coming through, when you're playing all these computer games about like being in the Champions League, watching Champions League games, they were a team that was always involved in stuff like that. So for me, a wee achievement was to go away and play there and win. Although surprisingly, we played Luzerne away in the Cup, in the Europa as well. And their stadium was amazing because I think it was around about the time it was the Austria-Switzerland World Cup, Euros even, and it had all been built up and it was like this big golden stadium that was just amazing. So probably one of them. Played at Hampden a few times, played at Celtic Park and stuff. So probably the Rosenborg one for me sticks out.
What was the best prank you witnessed in football?
It's probably something that you couldn't actually discuss. But one of the funniest, I think it's been mentioned before, was Martin Scott pretending to be Dick Campbell. And that Dick Campbell was sitting in the toilet behind him. And they did a full 10-minute spiel pretending it was Dick Campbell, marching up and down and shouting and bawling. And then at the end of it, Dick Campbell started laughing and the whole team just went into fits of laughter and Jimmy went bright red. But there's been loads of pranks over the, like, people's shoes getting hidden or stapled to the floor and people's gear getting cut. And I think there was one time we had a physio actually at Ross County, and the boys wrapped his car in cling film and it had been snowing, and they covered his whole car with snow, like packed it and just absolutely covered it. And it was quite funny when he came out and he was looking for his car and it was under a big pile of snow.
Why is it the physios are always the target? What is it they're doing wrong?
I think it's because when players come back for injury or whatever and they get peppered and they've got to do loads of sprints. And I'm sure at that point, where Ross County is right next to the sea, and I think he made a few boys go into the sea and stuff for like for ice cold recovery. So I think he got peppered a wee bit that season.
And what's the best insult you've heard on the pitch?
On the pitch? God knows. I remember Doug Emery used to argue with me all the time because I would be up against him and stuff, and he would try and slaughter me or whatever, but he was a really good guy playing against him. He was a tough competitor and he'd slaughter me and stuff. I'd be like, hey, we're playing in the same league. How can you be saying so much? And he would just laugh and stuff like that. But other than that, like, I don't think I've heard that too, any two slaggings. Obviously, you've heard other people's stories where they're talking about like money, slaggings and whatever else, but anything on the pitch has never been too bad.
Have you heard anything from the fans? Fans can be quite cruel with some of their analysis.
I remember one time playing for Livy in the Italian escapades, because I was a young guy, 18, had a good suntan and whatever else. I was getting shouted abuse at, like getting told I should go back to Italy and whatever else. And I turned around and I was like, mate, I'm from Glasgow, what are you talking about? And the guy was like,
What's the best crowd chant you've ever heard? And have you ever had a Gary Miller song?
I don't know if I've had a song individually. I've had my name chanted and whatever else, but I think the county team had a few chants. There was certainly a few songs that used to come on when certain players scored and stuff, and it was always enjoyable. Can't actually remember what the song was, but that season we were winning every game was brilliant, and we always used to get involved with the fans behind in the jail end and stuff. And I think that the season we actually won that, you know, was brilliant, because I think you had Michael Gardine scored about 15 goals, Carl McMenamin scored 20 goals, I think Richie Britton scored 10 and stuff like that, and, you know, Stevie Craig, other players scored quite a lot of goals that season. There was just a great camaraderie and they sort of jumping about with the fans and singing. I think it was Ayr United away, clawed his back twice to two each. And Richie Britton scored late on, and for some reason all the Ross County fans took one of their shoes off and they were holding their shoes up in the stand singing, we've only got one shoe or something. And I remember during the game thinking, this is so strange, and it's something that my parents laugh and joke about as well. And it's like, no idea where that came from, but if people can remember that, it would be funny.
Well, we come to the end of a very entertaining and informative episode. Very big thank you, Gary, for joining us today, and also for confirming the exclusive that he negotiated contracts in Las Vegas and then immediately gambled his signing bonus on the roulette table. But we're not to tell his missus. She doesn't know. Thank you, Gary.
Very much.
Join us next week for another forensic journey into the annals of Scottish football, our website at csi.com, and you can find our socials. But until then, very goodbye. Thank you very much, Gary.
Cheers, thanks a lot.